Good to see everybody this morning. Nice to have some visitors with us today. A couple faces that we haven't seen in a few weeks as well. Nice to have you with us. Just good that we can all be here together to worship together. Just a couple of family notes for the moment. But the other thing I know is that Mother's Day is a difficult day for some of you. You know, some of you would like to be mothers and just couldn't be. Some of you are experiencing grief as part of the mothering process, and I know that it's difficult, and I want to acknowledge that and be sensitive to that this morning. But I also just I want to acknowledge all of the time and energy, the love and patience that goes into being a mother, because it is a God-given task. It's a glorious task some days, and as Duffy said, there's other days that you wonder if you shouldn't put that kid somewhere and tie them up for their own protection or yours. Mothering is difficult. I wanted to find the story of the perfect mother, and so I just started thinking through the stories of mothers in the Bible, and there are quite a few of them, but one of the things that I learned from my study of mothers in the Bible is that there aren't any perfect mothers. In fact, there's a lot of mothers whose mistakes are the part of the stories that got their names into the accounts of the Bible. You take Tamar, for example. We know about Tamar because she pretended to be a prostitute and slept with her father-in-law and had a child. Then there's Sarai, who gave her maidservant to her husband to sleep with so that he might have an offspring. There's Bathsheba, who not only committed adultery with King David, but later asked her son Solomon to give David's personal heater and cook to Solomon's half-brother as a wife. Then there's Athaliah, who killed her own family so she could be the ruler of Judah. And many more, but finally we get down to Mary, the mother of Jesus, the only woman in the history of humanity to raise a perfect child, who she lost for 3 days. She forced him to work his first miracle when he wasn't quite ready for those things yet. And then she tried to remove him from his ministry because she thought he was crazy. So, moms, don't worry if you haven't gotten it all right every time. And don't worry if your children say something at the most inopportune times. Just say, well, we're going to teach them better. You know, and it's great to hear the kids in church on Sunday morning, even when they say amen at times we're not expecting it or ask other questions. You know, I remember one of my children. They were about 2 years old, and they'd been given this wonderful sweatshirt from their grandmother, and it was a wonderful sweatshirt. And right in the middle of communion, when everything was quiet, they bumped the button on the sweatshirt and it said, TTF? No, ta-ta for now. Something. It was a Tigger sweatshirt and it had Tigger's phrase. And Brenna will tell me later what it really said because she's a mother and she remembers those things. You see, I don't have to. I just tell the story and say, well, if you want the details, ask her. That's my responsibility. So, you're not perfect. None of you are as mothers. None of you have to be. You just have to give your best. But this morning, I don't want to speak to just the mothers. I, I don't like speaking about Mother's Day because I know it's difficult for some, but I want to speak to everyone this morning. And I know that if you look at the bulletin, my sermon is titled Dear Mom, but this morning we're going to look at two different viewpoints, two different sides of that. But I also know that there's many here today who aren't moms, and some of you who aren't even raising children anymore. And so when we get to the second point this morning, while we will be addressing moms, it also pertains to dads, it pertains to grandparents, and any who play the role in or have influence over children. And so this morning I want us to look at Ephesians chapter 6, and the beginning of this chapter comes right in the middle of a section where Paul is writing to the Ephesians, and he's instructing them on the necessity of mutually honoring relationships. And yes, I know, I can read that this is addressed to fathers and not mothers, but I'm pretty sure that it applies very equally to both. And so let's look at chapter 6 of the book of Ephesians. If you don't have a Bible with you, there's Bibles in the pew backs in front of you, or in the chairs, on the bottoms of the chairs there in front of you. If you've got an electronic device, you probably have access to a Bible. So Ephesians chapter 6, Paul writes this. He says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the instruction and discipline of the Lord." You see, this is part of what Paul is writing, and it's about being mutually honoring to one another within a relationship. And the first side of this mutually honoring relationship, I think I wrote a tongue twister for this sermon, is addressed to children. And so the first thing we need to see is Paul talks about honoring your parents. And I want to say honoring your mom in particular this morning, as we are celebrating Mother's Day. And it's an interesting idea, it's an interesting concept, and I'm just going to stare at the high schoolers over here this morning because all the other kids have left. So, and Jackson will make fun of me anyway, so I'm just going to stare at him. Not really. But we're all children. How many of you came into this world some other way than being born? All right, so we were all children at one point in time. We are all children. But as children, especially as those that are younger and still living under their parents' house, they're still living under their parents' rules, when Paul writes this, he's going back and he's referring to the Old Testament. He's referring to the law of Moses that God gave the children of Israel in the desert. And he's giving them some instructions that would have been quite familiar to those that were Jews, but maybe not quite so familiar to the Ephesians who weren't raised with the Old Testament. But Paul says this. He says, honor your parents. Honor your parents. And when we think about honoring, there's several things that we can say, but the first one is be obedient. You know, we look at honoring, and the first way to honor your parents is to be obedient. When your parents tell you to do something, our first goal, our first object as children is to be obedient. To do the things that they ask us to do, and to not just do it, but to do it with all of your energy and to do it with all of your strength and to do it right the first time. So that your parents don't have to look at you and say to you, excuse me, you need to go back and do that again. You need to make sure that you are going to do the job and do it right. Or if your parents tell you to be home at a certain time, you do your best to not just be on time, but to be early. You know, there's nothing wrong with being 5 minutes early for your curfew. But if you always shoot to be just on time, you know more often you're going to be 5 minutes late than 5 minutes early. It's part of being obedient. It is doing the things that your parents tell you and your parents expect you to do. And when Paul was when Moses was writing this command the first time, he was definitely speaking of being obedient, but he was also speaking of being respectful. And in fact, if you go back and you study the law of Moses and you study the things that Moses later was instructed by God to write, you find that honoring your parents definitely included being obedient, but it also included being respectful, because if you were disobedient, if you were respectful to your parents, the law of Moses said that if you continually are disrespectful and you are continually dishonoring to your parents, that the parents were supposed to take their children to the elders of the city, and it was a capital offense. Now, I don't think this was just a mom said make your bed and you continually don't make your bed, but it was living with an attitude of disrespect. It was showing your parents that you had no respect for authority. And if you had no respect for the authority of your parents, what God was saying is you won't have respect, you won't have authority or respect for authority at any level. You know, if you can't respect and have authority, the authority of your parents when you live under their roof, you can't be expected to obey the authority of a teacher. Or you won't expect the authority of a police officer. And so what Moses' law was trying to do was to protect the culture. Children, you're supposed to be respectful. And finally, as children, when Moses wrote this and Paul is quoting this particular passage from the Old Testament, it deals with being gracious to your parents. Because children, as I said in the introduction, your parents aren't perfect. You're not perfect either, but your parents aren't perfect and they make mistakes. You know, is there any parent who never made a mistake while they're raising their children? Okay, good, because you all took your children home from the hospital and we all have made mistakes. Misinterpreting a cry when they're little, misinterpreting some pain as they grow up, misinterpreting the facts and punishing them when they maybe didn't deserve to be punished. But children, you have to be gracious with your parents, understanding that they're trying to do their best with the knowledge that they have and the things that they've been given. And so we as children, you as children, need to honor your parents. And it's unfortunate that we take Mother's Day to talk about this, but it's that day that we remember our moms, and so it's a great day to do it. But the interesting thing is if you study the book of Moses, you study what Paul is writing here as he's quoting this, it isn't just to those that are living underneath their parents' roofs that Paul is writing. Paul is writing to all of those who have parents. So if you are 20 years old and just leaving your parents' house for the first time, if you're 40 and you have children that you're raising on your own but you still have parents, if you're 60 and your parents are still alive, if you're 70 or 80 and your parents are getting up there in age but they're still alive, Moses is writing to you, and Paul is thus writing to you as adult children about how you're supposed to treat your parents. You know, we are supposed to, as adults, we're supposed to honor our parents. And honoring our parents changes a little bit as we grow older and as we mature. But I think one of the things that is a necessity is that we speak well of our mothers. That we honor our mothers in the things that we say about her. No, none of our parents are perfect, and your parents may have been some of the worst parents in the world. I don't know what your heritage is, what your background with your parents is. But you need to speak well of your mother. And I think maybe some of the advice that we as parents give our children when they're young, we need to remember as parents for ourselves, as we need to remember as adult children ourselves. And that is this, is if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. If you're in a situation and you don't have anything nice to say about your mother, maybe you just need to not say anything at all. But I have this sneaking suspicion that most of us, most people that are alive today, can at least think of one good thing they can say about their mother. If it's nothing more than, she gave birth to me and I'm glad to be alive. We can at least say that for our mothers. They gave us birth. Because you all said you were born, and I know my biology. So, we can all at least say thank you for that. But I have a sneaking suspicion that most of us can look at our relationships with our moms and find some nice things to say. And we need to speak well of her, not just not speaking badly, but we need to take every opportunity that we have to praise our mother, to say good things about our mother, to build our mother up in the eyes of other people, and especially to say to her, thank you, to honor her as we speak to her. And I know that for some of you that may be difficult, to just speak to your mother, because things are strained, things are difficult. But you need to take every opportunity you can to just speak to her and to do your part, because Paul says this, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. As far as it depends on you, you need to be at peace with your mother. And it's a great day. Mother's Day is a great day to remind you of that. And we need to speak to our mothers. But also, if we look at the law of Moses, one of the things that was supposed to take place was children were supposed to provide for their parents in their older age. You see, we live in a different society. We live in a different culture where things work a little bit differently. But in the day when Moses wrote this, and the day when Paul was writing to the Ephesians, you didn't have retirement plans at work. You didn't have 401ks. You didn't have Social Security. You didn't have those things. And part of the deal was you raised your children and you lived with your parents, or in close proximity to your parents. And so part of the thing that when the law of Moses was written was adult children were supposed to take care of their aging parents. They were supposed to be the ones there to provide for their needs as they became less able to provide for themselves. There weren't nursing homes to help with that situation, and so it was all done in the family. Now, I understand that we live longer, we have different health concerns, we sometimes need outside help, but we need to do that in the most loving way. We need to care for our parents in the best way possible as we look at them as they continue to age. You know, there are a few things that trouble me more than to visit somebody who's a little bit older and they have adult children, and you ask them how often their children come around, and they say, oh, never. Oh, once a year we see them. They only live a few blocks away. Oh, they're busy with their family. They're busy with their things. But you see, when we look at honor, when we look at what Paul is writing about when he says honor, if we're followers of Christ, part of our responsibility is to honor our parents as we age and as they age, and that means that we do our best to care for them. We do our best to visit with them, and I like what Robert J. Morgan wrote about Proverbs 31, the woman, the Proverbs 31 woman. But he writes this. He says, rubies are very hard gemstones, almost as hard as diamonds. but much more colorful. They are considered today as being more rare and expensive than even diamonds. The most famous source of rubies is in Burma or Myanmar. In the ancient world, rubies were called kings of precious stones, and they were the rarest and most beautiful precious stones. Solomon imported rubies for his kingdom, along with vast amounts of gold, silver, and precious stones. In his writings in Proverbs, he used rubies as the standard for comparing the value of other things. Three things are specifically more precious than rubies. First, the ability to speak prudently. Second is wisdom. And the third is a godly woman. You see, we all have a mother, and she deserves to be treated well. To honor our mother is to treat her with respect and with dignity, to remember that she is important. But Paul doesn't just stop with mothers. As I said, this is about mutually honoring relationships. This is about both sides of a relationship doing what it takes to honor the other side and to honor the relationship itself, and to strengthen and to build into this relationship so that it is what God intended for it to be. Every relationship that we have is supposed to be a mirror. It's supposed to be an illustration of the relationship that God has with us. And as such, every relationship is, God wants it to be as strong and as perfect as possible. And so the second side of this honoring relationship is spoken, well, in Paul's words, to fathers. In the idea of today's sermon, it's honor your mothers, or mothers, love your children. But as I said, it applies to mothers, it applies to fathers, it applies to grandparents who have an active role in their grandchildren's life. It applies to the aunts and uncles who build into their nieces and nephews' lives. It applies to any of us who have a level of influence in the lives of children. But love your children. And Paul says, he says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And here's what I know. I can speak from experience, and some of you have had more experience than I have, and we all have different experiences, but here's what I know. It's a difficult job. To raise your children and not provoke them, to raise them to love the Lord, is a difficult job. Again, from Robert J. Morgan, he asks the question, he says, have you ever built or remodeled a house? Raising children is a lot like building and remodeling a house. And there are four principles that you need to know if you're going to build or remodel a house. One, it will take more time than you planned. Two, it will cost you more than you had figured. Right, dear? It will be more messy than you had anticipated. And third, it will require more patience than you thought possible. Now, we all love the ideas of little babies until we have little babies and we find out that, man, they don't let you sleep at night. And they take more time than you had planned. And then you start to figure out how much diapers cost. And the price of diapers isn't cheap. And then you find out that they need formula, or they need special baby food, or they start to cost money. And they take more money than you figured when you thought, let's have a kid. And somewhere along the lines you think, well, let's have another one. It's got to be cheaper with number two. Or three, or four, because we can reuse the stuff we had before. And then you find out that it's not in style anymore, or it doesn't fit this child, fit the other one right, but it doesn't fit this one right. Or you've got boys and girls, and you just can't dress the poor boys in dresses. It's not nice. They have scars for the rest of their lives. Thank you, sisters. And patience. Some kids require more patience than others, but they all require patience. Even the ones that you think are nearly perfect require patience some days. And it's a difficult job because some days they'll say things when you don't want them to. Some days they'll say things that you don't want them to. Little kid was asked to pray for a meal with the family around, and he looks at his mom and he says, "I'm not sure I can do that." And mom says, "Well, just hear what you say me pray. Hear me pray all the time." So the little kid prayed, sat down and said, "Dear God, help me if you ever do that again." Parenting is difficult. And it goes, you know, it's a difficult job, but you have to do it right. You have to take the time to do it well. It's a costly job. Raising kids is a costly job, but it's an important one. I mean, you just think about the time or the things that raising children costs you. And I, in my notes up here, if you want to come look, I put $3 signs, but that probably isn't enough. It costs money, and it costs more money, and then it costs more money, and then it costs more. And you keep thinking in the next stage of life it will get cheaper. The problem is it doesn't get cheaper, it gets more expensive because they find more things that they need money for. I would love to go back to just paying for diapers for all of my kids. But now there's school fees and doctor fees and special event fees, and then they start driving and you got to pay insurance, and they want to go places, and it costs gas, and it costs more and more and more all the time. Money is one of those things, and you just have to know it's going to be costly, but it's most of the time it's worth it, except for when you got one like this one over here. No. And it's going to cost you time. You know, how much time does it cost to raise a child? Well, there's those days when all you think as a parent, especially a mom, especially if you're a stay-at-home mom, where you feel like all you've done all day is chase this little thing on 2 feet around the house and picked up one mess after another. First, it's the toys they throw all over the floor. Then they eat lunch and make a mess of themselves in half of the kitchen. And then they're running around the house and they decide to take their diaper off and just drop a load somewhere. And then you take them shopping, and they find a place inside the middle of a rack of clothes to relieve themselves. And then they eat supper, and you take them out because it's been such a stressful day, and you take them out to eat at McDonald's, and they generally eat so well, but you take them to McDonald's and it takes them 3.5 hours to finish 2 chicken McNuggets because there's so much going on and they just can't pay attention. And it just multiplies. Somehow you figure out how to fit 3 weeks into one day with a little child. 24 hours, you cover 3 weeks of stuff, and it takes time. And you wonder, how am I going to do all of this? And it costs you some sleep. You know, from the moment you bring them home and you realize that the nurses were being nice to you at the hospital, when they took care of your kids at 3 o'clock in the morning, and suddenly you find out that they wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and they really need something, like they need their diaper changed, or they need to eat, or they just want to play at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, you're saying, "I gotta sleep." And the kid says, "No, we want to play. Let's play. Let's have fun." It costs you some sleep. And then they grow up to be teenagers. And you let them go somewhere, and you know, you're normally in bed long before they come home, but you stay awake just for them. To make sure they're okay. To make sure that they make it home on time. To make sure that they've obeyed the rules. and you're there for them, and it costs you some sleep. Or maybe you've raising a child that isn't quite so easy, and it costs you some sleep as you lay awake and you worry about your child. You worry for your child. Or maybe you've raised your children and they're out on their own and it costs you some sleep because some nights you just worry about how they're doing. And it costs you, well, I wrote cold food. How many times does a mother eat cold food? But it isn't just cold food. It's everything else. It's all of those things that as a mother you give up, that you put on hold for your children. You know, cold food is one of those things because you fix everybody's food and you make sure the little ones are eating, and by the time you get them fed, your food is cold. Or everybody needs some new clothes, but you take care of making sure that the kids get new shoes and they get new jeans and they get new shirts, and meanwhile you're doing your best to make that wardrobe of yours that you've been wearing for a while last. And it's costly. It costs us some things. It costs us privileges as we give up some of our own rights because we have children. And we don't do some things that we used to do because now we have to take care of the kids. And it's costly. But as I read Paul, there's one more thing I want to say, and that is that we have to set some boundaries. Paul says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Our purpose, our goal is to raise our children and to point them to the Lord. Our purpose and our goal is to raise children who are well fit in society. Yes, we want to be able to launch our children into society and have them fit and do well. But our first and our primary goal as Christian parents is to see that our children know Jesus Christ and to have a relationship with Him. And the thing is Paul writes this in this way because one of the greatest ways to turn our children away from the Lord is to not illustrate what it means to follow Him well. And to raise our children to know how to honor and to not want to run from you and rebel from you means that you have to raise your children well. And as I thought about this, I've just thought about my experiences, I've thought about the experiences I've seen in the lives of other parents, I've thought about the things that I have read and I've studied, and as I just think about what Paul writes, I want to say this, is that we have to set boundaries. We have to have some rules when we raise children. We have to have some boundaries and rules in how we deal with our adult children. We have to have some boundaries and rules in how we deal with our grandchildren or other kids that we have relationships with to help them and point them in the direction of knowing the Lord. And one of those is we have to make sure that the boundaries are well known. You know, we have to raise our children to know what's expected of them and to know what the lines are and to know where they can and they can't go. And we have to make sure that we articulate those well, and we have to make sure that they're appropriate to their ages, because you know what? I have four children and they don't all have the same rules at my house. Two of my children are expected to go to bed much earlier than one of them. And one of them I don't have control over anymore. You know, I can't call Logan and say, "Okay, are you in bed by 11 o'clock every night?" You know, now Lauren, I can tell her she needs to go to bed, and I can tell her this is the time of night you need to go to bed, and I can say, "Okay." And there are rules, and there are other rules that my children are expected to follow, and here's the thing, my children know what those rules are. And we have to make sure that they know what those rules are and make sure that they're well specified. Because here's the thing, if you think that you want your children to follow a rule and you don't specify it, and they break what you think should be a rule, and they don't understand why, you can't follow the rest of the advice that God gives about following rules. And you can't do what He's asking, and you cannot raise good children without rules that are well known. So you need to make sure that those rules, those instructions are well known. And second, you have to make sure they're followed. You have to make sure they're followed. And I mean, all the time. It's not okay to have a set of rules that you expect your children to follow sometimes. Because they'll never know when sometime is. My children were expected to follow the same rules whether they were in church or at home. You know, sometimes I told them I expected them to be on their best behavior, but they were expected to follow the same rules. You know, if I don't let them crawl on my furniture at home, I don't think they should be crawling across furniture at your house. If I don't let my children run around in the street at home, I don't think they should be able to do it at grandma's house. If I expect my children to treat people with respect at home, they should do it when they go out in public. Whether it's the cashier at the grocery store, or the police officer they meet on the street, or anyone else. And we have to make sure they follow the same rules all the time. And make sure that they obey them. And then we have to make sure that appropriate punishment is given and that it's followed through on. I was watching a small child yesterday with their parent, and I could tell that this parent hadn't done very good at following through with setting rules, because it was like four times they told the child to do the same thing and the child kept doing what they weren't supposed to do. And every time the parent said, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you're going to have to stop doing anything. You're just going to have to sit down. And it was like four times that this went on. And finally the parent said, okay, that's it. And they stopped the activity and they set the child down. But that child wouldn't sit there. The child got up a couple of times, the child was asked to do something else, and it lipped off to its parent and never really followed through. And here's what I know. We may not be perfect parents, and kids sometimes may test the boundaries, and sometimes they may not like the punishments, and they may argue about punishments, but if you follow through with your punishments on your children, if no really means no, if you tell your children no, they can't have more to eat, and they try to sneak some more and they're punished for doing it. Now, I punished the wrong child once for eating when they weren't supposed to. We had a birthday cake sitting on a counter, and I was sure I knew which child was sneaking in and eating little chunks of that birthday cake. And they knew they weren't supposed to. And they claimed that they weren't doing it, but I was sure I knew which one it was, because none of the other ones were tall enough to reach the cake. And later, the proof came out, the evidence was there, that I was wrong. Had to punish a different child, had to apologize to one and punish a different one for eating the birthday cake when they weren't allowed to. But you know what? They knew what the rules were and they knew what the punishment would be. And we followed through. And that child learned some lessons. And here's the thing, if we make rules and we expect them to be followed through and we follow through with punishment that is appropriate, children learn that they're supposed to follow rules. But they also learn that we love them, and that's why we have the rules set that we do. And then we have to make sure that there are rewards that can be earned and that those rewards are appropriate as well. When your children obey and they do the right things, they need to know that sometimes they will be rewarded for those things. They need to know that they'll be honored. They need to know that they'll be respected. They need to know that they are valuable and important. And they need to be rewarded. And I don't know what those rewards are. You have to look at those things. But you know, as grandparents, I know many of you are grandparents, and you, from occasion, from time to time, you get to watch your grandchildren or take care of your grandchildren. You need to have an understanding of what your children's rules are for their kids and honor that so that the kids learn that rules are really rules. Now, sometimes you can spoil your grandkids and sometimes you can spoil your kids, but you have to make sure that it's done appropriately so that they know that it's out of love that you're treating them special for this little period of time. They're called rewards. Now, as we celebrate Mother's Day, I just want to say this one last thing. Paul says that all of this is for one purpose. This isn't so that you can get the Mother of the Year award. This isn't so that you will be voted the world's best mom. Because here's what I know. Most of us look at our mothers and say she's the world's best mom. Because she was the mom that raised us and gave us the nurturing and the love that we needed. Now, some of us would have rather had a different mom. You look at your friends' moms and you say, man, I wish she would have been my mom. But Paul is concerned with your being a good mom, he's more concerned with how you're leading your children to the Lord. How you're training and instructing your children to love the Lord. And if you're raising children, the message is be consistent and point them to Him in all things. But maybe you've already raised your children and your children are grown and they have children of their own. And here's the advice that Paul has. He says, you continue to honor your parents and let your children see what it looks like for you to honor your parents if they're still alive. And if they're not, you continue to honor the relationship that you have with your children and your children's children, and you honor them well, and you consistently live your relationship with God the Father before them. You see, the purpose of being a good parent isn't just to receive some great parent award, it's to point your children to Jesus Christ, to show them that Jesus loves them, and to live out that love that Jesus has for you in the relationship that you have with them. The greatest thing that you can see in the life of your children isn't a world's best mom mug or a flower that you can plant in the garden. The best thing that you can see from your children is to see them accept Jesus as their own Lord and Savior. The best thing that you can see in the life of your children is a relationship with Jesus Christ that's well lived. And that's when you can look back on your life and you can say, I've done my job well. When you're a grandparent and you see your grandchildren begin that relationship with Jesus Christ, you can say, I've done well.